astronauts report it feels good. T-minus 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
Hello, baby.
Hello, baby.
Hello.
Hello again. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hey.
Hey, friend.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi, home.
Hi.
Yo.
G'day.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, guys.
Hackers Without Borders, the greatest podcast on the planet.
Guys, tune in. Great show. It's not just about football.
That's one small step for man.
Here we go. We got Eric from the Acme Army once again joining us here on Packers Without Borders 3.12489. I think maybe we'll just call it Pie. Packers Without Borders Pie. The relaunch. Matt Stevenson and I were talking about calling it the Matrix Resurrections.
I love it. I love it. Well, hey, man, thanks for having me on. Thanks for letting me sit in the great Bruce Edmonds seat now that he's gone. And boy, you guys got a great show and appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate that. Bruce is, of course, he's running a couple of businesses. That alone, I run one business. He runs two. And I can tell you one business is ridiculous. To run two is obscene. You know, I'm sure he's just running around on Red Bulls and straight espresso shots from his coffee shop. And then, of course, he's got a large family, too, right? And those kids are graduating and they're going through high school and stuff. It's a tough time.
Yeah.
And for lesser men, it would be a difficult challenge. But I think that he is definitely up for the challenge. He's going to need to climb that mountain. And I'm sure we'll talk to him somewhere in the flippity flop in the near future.
All right, that's good.
I want to talk to you about the Packers hiring defensive coordinator Jeff Hafley. Who is this guy? Have you heard of this guy? What do you think?
Oh boy, have I heard of him. Well, first of all, we have this whole defensive coordinator search was so crazy because there were so many people's names that came up to the top of that list.
Oh yeah.
And not too many people had heard of Jeff Hafley. And the only reason I had known about Jeff Hafley is because I lived in Columbus, Ohio for, 8 years. My family is huge. They're all former Buckeyes. My son on Saturdays has got his Buckeye shirt on. On Sundays, it's a Green Bay Packer jersey, So I remember that season in 2019, Ryan Day was the new head coach, right? And Jeff Hafley was a co-defensive coordinator. And that was the first time I'd ever seen in college football a co-defensive coordinator. What the hell does that mean? What is the specialization difference here for them to need two at the college level? It always confused me. But that team was so great that year. I mean, you remember, I mean, the defense, as reported, was number one in the country, went from 70th to number one. He was a part of that, and I remember specifically when he got hired by Boston College, and just because of the AJ Dillon, we know about Boston College. You kind of know the name. But to think that he's our defensive coordinator, that was something that never popped in my head, didn't pop in anybody else's head. And that's what I think the biggest controversy of this guy was that shock of who is this guy? Why do we do this? Is this nepotism in the NFL again? Because he might have known some coaches that Matt LaFleur had known,
That goes in all aspects of life. It's all in who you know. Mm-hmm. And I mean, perfect example, every year we need about 16 employees for the summer. Generally I go, we have a small town, so I go right to the high school here. Those kids come right out when I need them and they got to go back to school. Plus, they love the fact that they're making money, still living at home. These are my ideal employees.
Yeah.
I know your parents.
Yeah.
You need the job so you can party. You get the weekends off. You get to, you know, and the kids that I know from last year or their brothers or this is my neighbors, we totally hire them first. 100%. Yeah. Cause then I don't have to look.
Yeah.
And knowing who it is you're hiring beforehand, instead of going, well, I had 20 questions for this guy and he scored the highest. So he's the guy I'm going to go with. I don't really know. It's probably not a good idea, yeah. Especially for LaFleur with who hired Bisaccia. And that's just an absolute mess.
Ugh. I'm glad you said that. Let's talk about that. Let's footnote that.
Yeah. Right. Bisaccia is an absolute mess. He hired Pettit. That didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
He's hired Joe Barry and stood behind Joe Barry, and that did not work out at all.
Yep.
So now, you know, and one of the statements he made during the season really pissed me off was he's the offensive coordinator, he's the head coach, and now he's going, I'm going to stick my head in the defensive coordinators. No, if I have to go to one of my managers and start doing their work for them, I get a new manager. That's that. I didn't hire the guy so that I could do his work.
Yeah.
So now he's got Pettit, Barry, Bisaccia. Oh, how about, what was the special teams coach before Bisaccia? He should have gotten rid of that guy after the Jordan Love Kansas City game. Remember him? Jerry, what was his name? I can't think of it.
Yeah, I'm blanking right now.
But he should have got rid of that guy then. So we know now that Matt LaFleur does not hire well.
Yeah.
So he's got to sink all of his eggs in the basket, because let's be honest, right? LaFleur's doing a great job as an offensive coordinator, probably coach of the year as far as I'm concerned. Having Jordan Love and five wide receivers who, you know, are all no names, do what they did this year. Incredible. Mm-hmm. Absolutely incredible. Yeah. He got that offense humming again. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody else might have been, maybe Shanahan, maybe McVay. Okay. There's a few guys that might have been able to do it. Yeah. But if he doesn't get this one right, I think this one gets tied to him.
Yep.
And it sinks him.
This is the one that definitely is tied to him 100%. And that's why I respected this selection, I think. Because when my concern was initially Chris Orr, for example. He's in the Baltimore defense. Everybody was going for, you know, Weaver. They loved everybody that was in that Baltimore Ravens defensive tree. Chris Orr being 31 years old, and everybody saw the clips out there on social media where he is just a fiery, in-your-face guy. He's 31 years old, though. He was coaching the linebackers, which is a position he played, was a second-team All-Pro in. He can talk the players' language. He can knows right off the bat how to get them inspired.
And, like Dan Campbell.
Yes, exactly. What we need, though, is what Jeff Hafley is. And we need somebody that has, number one, the experience. All right. I mean, not to mention that he coached, you know, Darrell Revis at Pittsburgh. But he's been through all these college and pro scenarios where he has been a teacher. I think Richard Sherman was one of the guys that said how well prepared he was. We have such a young secondary. And that's the weakness of our defense, right? Right now, going into this next season, the weakness is the depth and the youth that we have back there that needs really good teaching. Plus his aggressiveness on the front. I mean, our front seven, I love, thought they were underutilized in so many ways. I can't wait to see this whole transgression from what Barry had to what Jeff can teach, you know, a very young team. A teacher is what I think is just the thing that is the most important thing for me here.
Well, that's exactly, and you know, he's a DB coach to start, and I played DB, and I started as a DB coach, so I absolutely love the idea.
Yeah.
I agree with you with Orr. Again, at the same time, though, I disagree with you because I think the Ravens defense has been so strong for so long that if we could just get a little piece of that.
A little bit,
that would be better.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I agree with you on the front seven. They've totally not used properly. I don't think there was a week that went by that I didn't scream, why the fuck do we've only got two fat guys in the dirt? We need three. Put Slayton, Wyatt, and Clark in the dirt and let Gary and Preston go to work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And instead, we would put two guys there and Gary and Preston and get double teamed, and we'd wonder why there wasn't any pressure. And
on the goal line.
Yeah, and there'd be no adjustments. There'd be no changes. We had Rasul Douglas come out and be very adamant about it. We had Jair Alexander after the Justin Jefferson game last season.
Yeah.
Say, well, I do what I'm supposed to do and I'm not supposed to travel, blah, blah, blah. Basically call out Barry. And then yep. Barry says, okay, you go line up on Jefferson mm-hmm. and gives his star an opportunity. And he shuts Jefferson down and shut up Barry.
Yes.
We then also had guys like Campbell talk about scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Amos talking about scheme.
Yeah.
We had players talking out about Barry. I think not only did we not use the front seven properly, but once again, all the way back since 2010, the tight ends were catching whatever they wanted in the middle and running all day long. Our mm-hmm. run game was absolutely non-existent. No, we didn't give up a 40-yard bomb, but we gave up 8 plays for 40 yards, and that resulted mm-hmm. in a touchdown. And it was worse because our defense was completely gassed. Mm-hmm. Our offense was cold on the side. It was absolutely killing us. The schemes yep. and adjustments just weren't happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think if we had a different play caller, and I know I've been quoted as saying a monkey with a dartboard would be doing better, but just a different play caller. And when you sit down and you take a look at what we have on paper, we have some of the best edge rushers in the game,
mm-hmm.
right? We've got some of the best defensive up front. Quay Walker, absolute stud. And instead, yeah. Quay Walker is playing 15 yards off the field. He should be blitzing until he can't run no more.
Yeah.
We've got Campbell running with their number one wide receiver, and they go, oh, well, that's the scheme. If you were the offensive coordinator and you knew that you could put Justin Jefferson on Kenny Clark, you would run that play a bazillion times. Of yeah. course you would.
Yeah.
The adjustments weren't being made. And when you look at the first rounder with the first rounder and the first rounder and the first rounder, and then you get into that depth that you talk about of the DBs, and I completely agree. I think we're missing a couple of pieces in there.
Yeah.
But even Ballantyne and Valentine were balling out.
Mm.
So if we could, you're watching the individual battles. We are winning the individual battles, but as a collective group, we're just in the wrong position or we're yeah. being outmanned. We've got two fat guys on the 1 yard line and we're yeah. running an 8 yard soft zone. So the different play calling I'm excited for.
Mm-hmm.
Having the corners press, if you remember way back when, and I know you're an old guy like me, but you remember Al Harris and Mike McKenzie?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh.
All they did was press. All they yeah. did was press.
Yeah.
And our guys got home. Campman got home. Yep. KGB got home. These yep. guys get home because we press. We don't press
yeah.
with Barry. Look at the last two touchdown drives against San Francisco. We were punishing San Francisco and Savage or Nixon catches any one of those two interceptions, that game is done.
It's over. Over.
Yeah. But instead of pressing, he let off and waited to see if we could get a pick.
Yeah.
Prevent defense prevents you from winning. The only time you play prevent defense is when it's 40 to 10, there's a minute left, and they're chucking bombs.
That's how it used to be when we were growing up.
That's it. That's it.
You'd hear Madden say, oh, they're in prevent defense right now. And it's at the end of the game yeah. when you're up by 6 points and they were throwing Hail Marys and you're like, okay, now that became, you know, run of the mill. Hey, this is second quarter,
yeah.
third quarter. Hey, we're just going to go into prevent right now and give our defense a little break, little
56 seconds left at the end of the first half. They've got no timeouts. You know what they're going to do. Let's play 8 yards off. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Are you kidding?
The Giants right. game was my turning point for Barry.
Yeah.
Because I am a ridiculous optimist. And I hate to have I don't like to sling any mud. I don't like to be because I know he's a human being, right? I know that yeah. as I get older, I know that how hard it has to be to have that pressure in that job. And I, you know, sure. everybody on Twitter was just laying it out there. But then you go, hey man, this team just looks better than what we're getting.
Yeah.
Like we have too many first round picks out there, but against that Giants team with Tommy DeVito,
oh.
that was where I pulled the ripcord. I was like, you know what? I'm done. It's time for a change. Like, I hear everybody else's rumblings. I'm the last one to adopt opinions that people put out there on Twitter. I have to go through a pretty, OCD-laden research on, really, what are we looking at here? And I love some of those guys that spit out some real stats, not the Pro Football Focus ones, but do the film study, Dustin Evely, all those guys that get into it. And I go, that's a concise argument for,
him to be gone. But then you saw it more and more. And we had the little uptick in there where you saw, really, we have, I mean, Valentine, I don't know if he's going to get resigned. You know, I mean, he should come back pretty cheap. But what Valentine did this year in that scheme as a seventh round rookie from Kentucky blew my damn mind. I can't believe that Gutekunst ever has a bad word said about him, because, you know, he spent the first round investment in Stokes. He's been injured for 2 years. We know what Stokes can do. He started as a rookie and just was unbelievable. Well, then Valentine just did the same damn thing. I mean, it was unbelievable play that
Rasul Douglas.
Hey,
I mean, he just keeps finding these DBs.
Yeah.
And you know what? Same goes for offense. Is there a guy that he is not consistently hitting on?
Yeah.
I mean, even when we drafted Wyatt and everybody was like the first year, well, maybe he doesn't look like, and I was like, yeah, it looks like he's having trouble settling in.
Yeah.
This year, he was getting the handoff, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
He was back there so often. Look at Quay Walker. Well, Quay's got a temper, this and that. I love a linebacker with a temper. I love a linebacker. He made some stupid mistakes.
Stupid mistakes. But you know what?
And he's cleaned it up so much better this year. But again, led the team in tackles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, led the team in tackles for loss. This kid is a stud.
Yeah.
You know, and we talk about, you know what? Campbell's coming into his final year here.
Yep.
We had a lot of injuries. I have an opinion about Campbell. What's your opinion about Campbell? Is he coming back this year? Are we cutting bait? Are we, what's happening?
100% he's coming back. There is no reason to cut Devondre Campbell. You're going to save $2.6 million on the cap. That doesn't make, you're not going to find anybody out there in the market for $2.6 million to do what he can potentially do when he's healthy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about an all-pro season with us that injury-related. There's a reason that Matt LaFleur changed our strength and conditioning coach. To get a new, because we had too many soft tissue injuries. We had players that were we needed a reset at that.
Yeah.
Devondre Campbell, it pissed me off in the San Francisco game when I'm seeing a guy out there who's playing so far out of position, having the assignment of George Kittle.
Yeah.
And cannot keep up with Kittle when he catches it on the right sideline. And Campbell's literally, whether he doesn't know the assignment, the instincts for him are not taking over 15 yards down the field to follow Kittle on that release.
Yeah.
He is an inside linebacker who is should be playing within that 10 yards of the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I think that it's foolhardy to say that you're going to release him to save $2.6 million because you don't have a replacement in Duffy that could play to his caliber.
No.
And if we bring in a rookie, if we draft somebody, which I assume that we're going to do in the first few rounds, you're not going to get that level of play that he knows, number one, just to play in the NFL. You know, what you need to do mentally, you cannot get replace that veteran for 2 6.
The Packers have a process, and this process is we bring you in and you sit, you watch, and you get in now and then. But you learn how to be a professional in this league.
Yeah.
I think that's exactly what happens. The Packers, first or second round, we grab ourselves an interior linebacker, somebody to partner with Quay. Mm-hmm. And that's what I would be thinking as GM. I need somebody that has the attributes that'll work well with Quay. If Quay is, you know, just like yin and yang, if Quay is the black, I need somebody to be the white. If Quay is the left, I need the right. I need somebody who does the opposite things and works well with Quay. You draft that guy. You let him watch Devondre, you know, who's going to be contract year. Guys always have that contract year. Yep. Super Mario ate the mushroom, you know.
Right.
They're ready to go the contract year.
Yeah.
After they get a contract, they're like, I'll tackle the guy next week. Yeah. When they're in their contract year, Savage, contract year.
Yeah.
Suddenly we see his name showing up positively. I still don't think he played himself into a spot. I think that Savage played like a fifth round pick that started to play like a third round pick. The problem is he's a first round pick and he's never played like a first round pick.
He had flashes his rookie year that I was so excited about to see what was going to happen. He had some really deep recovering interceptions that you were like, hey man, this is exactly what we needed back then. This is why they drafted him in the first round, moved up to 21 for him. But the point is, with Devondre Campbell, with that, the whole linebacking crew, you know, look at what they did to Rashawn Gary. Look at what they did to Devontae Wyatt. Like, They put them in and they're playing 30% of the plays first year.
Yeah.
They're playing, you know, 40. I think
look at Van Ness.
Wyatt was 49% in his second year, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they bring him along slowly for a reason. But Van Ness is he's a
monster, but what he played, maybe 25%.
Yeah, but what is he gonna be?
Oh,
what is he gonna be in this new defense? Which I mean, my daydreams between Rashawn Gary and Lucas Van Ness with Halfley, I'm just I'm excited about the possibility.
Oh, and Quay busting up through the middle.
Well, Matt, you were talking about the inside linebackers, but to compliment Quay Walker, I look at Tampa Bay's linebackers as the best duo that I've seen in 10 years. I mean, 3 years ago when Levante David and Devin White were flying around the field. Yeah. Quay Walker has that ability. Who's the compliment? You know, it's not Devondre Campbell. Devondre Campbell is a real solid. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm excited to look in this draft season coming up. What are the inside linebackers out there in college football? Who are the guys that fly around with their hair on fire and just are ready to tackle, wrap up and tackle? And who can, when you have 3 interior down linemen and 2 edge rushers, what kind of stunts are they going to play for these linebackers to shoot those gaps? You know, that's the exciting thing I'm looking at from this linebacking group. Like,
that's exactly. I'm looking forward to the man-on-man coverage on the back end. Mm-hmm. Safety's looking for picks, basically like a Nick Collins back there.
Yeah.
And then that front 7 just getting after.
Yeah. Yeah. Because we got the players
that
to do
pressure
it.
On.
They got the ability to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you got the guy in the first round. What'd you get him for?
Yeah.
Fill up the Gatorade?
Yeah.
Hell no. Right? Go get the quarterback.
Let's talk about cornerbacks, though, for a minute here. Because Jair Alexander. So some of the discussions out there that have been online with Jeff Halfley, like, hey, you're gonna man up your corners. Like, that's going to give up big plays. The net on that is we're going to have the possibility for more turnovers, right?
Yeah.
More often. So we give up 17, 24 points a game at some point, like with your big plays. I just think about Minnesota, Justin Jefferson. You're not going to be able to lock him up 2 games a season and keep, you know, without having some big plays that could potentially impact the game.
The idea is you get so much pressure on that quarterback that you rattle his cage.
Yes.
And that he can't. He doesn't look to that read.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The idea is that, like, in college, guys are getting 3.5 to 4 seconds in the pocket. In the NFL, it's 2.5. The idea is to get it down to 2.
Yeah.
And get him hit every single time, hands on, every single time. And then before you know it, he's not making smart decisions. He's making business decisions. Mm-hmm. And when you got guys like Hercules, guys like Bain, Kenny Clark, Slayton, Wyatt, Way coming at you full speed and they're trying to take your head off, you start making the wrong decision.
Yeah.
And yeah, you know what? Maybe Justin Jefferson beats us for a 65-yard bomb in a 40-10 blowout because we sacked Cousins 6 times and we got 2 picks.
Yep.
I'll tell you, I'd rather give up a 40-yard bomb on one play than 8 4-yard rushes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's the thing that the point you just said there right there, because I look at it, the discussion of big play, giving up big plays, that's fine. I'm good with that, because when you're disrupting the quarterback that much, that gives, when's the last time we just, you know, that feeling you get when you're watching the Packers and Jair Alexander, he is so capable of making interceptions, and where have they been the last couple of years? Do you know what I mean?
We're just not getting any of them.
You're like, hey, I want to see picks again. That's what this defense allows us to do, because we have the players back. Valentine, I think he's going to have a real sticky year next year. Like, I think that guy's hands, like the way he covers these receivers in that first 15 yards, you're going to make some mistakes rushing that ball out. He's going to get a lot more picks. Do you know? That's what I'm looking to see from that defensive backfield.
When you've got those young corners in that locker room and they're talking about, like, we used to put $5 in a hat and whoever had the best paint mark on the helmet got the hat at the end of the game, right? Yeah. You've got those guys in there making internal, you know, conflicts. They're having contests in between each other. Oh, you got a pick? I'll get a pick. You got this? I'll get that, right?
Yeah.
And what happens is they stop concentrating on the game and start concentrating on the domination of the game.
Yeah.
And before they realize it, they look up and they go, Jesus, we've blown the last 6 teams out. What's going on?
Yeah.
Right? Our wide receivers do the same thing. They're like, oh, it was you this week. Holy smoke, man. What'd you get? 110? Oh, I got 119. I got 119 on my day, right? Mm-hmm. And when you see them pushing each other and getting each other, you know, psyched up in that, oh, man, you know, Eric just caught a 19-yard pass. He's up by 9 yards this game. I got to get something going. I got to do something. You start getting them performing at a much higher level because not only are they thinking I'm going to run this 7-yard button hook and then come in, but they're thinking, you know, the last time I ran this, I was free after six. I'm going to go left right away and try and beat out Watson, or I'm going to try and beat out Jair, right? And you want those competitions. You want those guys competing with each other.
Yeah.
Then you're getting even more out of them. We didn't seem to be getting that with our defense. Mm-hmm. They seem to be even keel right across the board.
Yeah.
Nobody really played with any emotion. There was never any of that. We laid a big hit and it changed the momentum. Mm-hmm. You remember, if you can remember back to Clay Matthews one time, Philadelphia came to Green Bay and Matthews destroyed, and there was Kolb. What was his name?
Kevin Kolb, right?
Yeah. And then who's the other guy too? He ended up winning a Super Bowl with the Eagles. The blonde haired guy. Everybody joked he had the big dick. What was his name?
From Philly?
Yeah. Remember? And they ran the, he looked like Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah. Foles was in that game too.
Yeah.
Like, and Quay kept smashing these guys. And one time he got a flag and, it was bad. He rammed him. Like, he shouldn't have done that.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I still disagreed with that flag.
I still do. I was like, legal. Like, he clearly led with the head.
Yeah.
But they changed that momentum of the game and the way that offense came out there.
Yeah.
Right? Much like the Lamar Jackson and the Kansas City Chiefs game. Mm-hmm. Lamar, you know, against the Bills, against anybody else, is out there tossing balls, is having a great time, laughing and joking. All of a sudden, he's in the third quarter and him and the wide receivers are yelling at each other.
I know.
That game is done. And the score was still right there. It was done. They were fighting with you. And we never seem to get those, that guy that would go out there and lay that smack or get that big, right? You think about the Dallas game there and, you know, Savage, who I don't think is coming back. But when Savage took that pick six, that building went dead silent.
Duh.
And everybody and their dog knew, you're not coming back from this.
Yeah.
You're just not coming back from this. And that's what we need more of. Because there was games, the Saints, the Giants, Tampa Bay, all of these games we should have won. We never had any of those, you're not coming back from these moments.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus, Carolina didn't score for 14 quarters. They come to Green Bay. They look like a whole bunch of pro bowlers. And then they leave and don't score for 2 weeks.
I get it.
You know what I mean? We've never been that team that just thumps the team they're supposed to thump. We always struggle against that team. Remember, think back to all the years of Detroit being just terrible. And how many times did we only win by 1 point and squeaked one out?
Field goals, you know?
Right? The Hail Mary. Yeah. The Hail Mary game, for Christ's sakes. And they were terrible. They were like 0-16 one year, and we only beat them by a combined 3 points over 2 games. Like, we never seem to just be that fucking force it.
Yeah.
Right? And I'd like to see that out of Jeff Heffley. Let's we're burning through.
Hi, I'm Amy. I'm from Wichita, Kansas.
I'm Alex Brown from the Derby City, Louisville, Kentucky.
This is Alyssa from Los Angeles.
All right, I'm Andy from Sheffield.
This is Chris from Nova Scotia.
Hey, this is Erin Alice from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Hi, everybody. This is Hilmi from Turkey.
I am Carla from California.
G'day, this is Mel from Melbourne, Australia.
This is Mick coming from Granger, Indiana.
This is Soren Stordegren coming to you from Sweden. And this is Packers Without Borders.
This is Packers Without Borders.
Packers Without Borders.
Packers Without Borders.
This is Tazim Wajed. You're listening to Packers Without Borders.
It's time for Matt's Motivational Meaningful Moment.
Every now and then, the rain falls.
Every now and then, the clouds take over. But every now and then, only every now and then, the sun shines on a dog's ass. Today, you're a dog's ass.
This has been Matt's Motivational Meaningful Moment.
Wichita, Kansas.
From the UK.
From Los Angeles.
From northern Wisconsin.
From Nova Scotia.
From the Derby City, Louisville, Kentucky.
From central Illinois.
From southern Cali.
From Turkey.
Omaha, Nebraska. From California.
From Melbourne, Australia.
From Chicago, Illinois.
They're from the UK. Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
And Go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.
The entire time here. Let's go right to the Super Bowl predictions. We got 49ers in Kansas City.
Ooh.
What's the over-under on seeing Taylor Swift?
Oh, boy. We're definitely going to see Taylor Swift. We're definitely going to see Taylor Swift. I know she's flying back from Tokyo the night of, let's say.
The Japanese consulate. I mean, how big of a superstar are you when a
Don't
country
worry.
Says,
she's going to be here.
We'll make sure when a country says it, not like her manager or some press guy, blogger. Yeah. The freaking country says, don't worry. Yeah. She'll be there for the Super Bowl. Everyone calm down. Mm. Right?
She's putting into into the market there, it's bonkers. Everywhere she goes. Everywhere
and, you know, Swifties aren't to be fucked with.
Not a bit. Not a bit.
Not for a second.
Not
for a second.
One bit. Yeah, I live in Philadelphia. She's born and raised, in Reading, skipping a jump here. And I bought my daughter's ticket for $2,000 for this summer. Ooh. To go see Taylor Swift. Actually, last May, May 12th. And listen, my daughter has so much Taylor Swift in her room and on her, in her clothes, everything else. She loves Taylor. As a father, when you take your kids to school, it's Taylor Swift because they got control of the jukebox now.
Yeah.
I mean, it went from Kids Bop to Taylor Swift, and I was thankful for that transition. But it's always Olivia Rodrigo, Taylor Swift. I have no problems with what Taylor Swift provides to the NFL right now. I mean,
it doesn't bother me.
It's a spectacle. Listen, I said it on the show that I had just on Thursday night. Taylor Swift being a part of the NFL has increased the conversations I've had with my 11-year-old daughter. And when I'm sitting there playing volleyball in the living room on our knees, as the Kansas City Chiefs Baltimore game is on the TV. And I go up to go to the bathroom and she's like, she's screaming, interception, interception. And I'm like, what? And I come running back out. She's like, yeah, Kansas City just got an interception. And it was the fumble that they forced on Lamar Jackson. I was like, oh, no, that's that's a forced fumble, not an interception. She's like, oh, wait. Yeah, that's right. That makes sense. The interception is when they pass it and it's caught. The fumble is when they knock it out. She's like, I get it. She's learned more about football in the last 10 weeks of her life than she ever has, wearing her Green Bay Packers jerseys and things every Sunday with me. She's more engaged and looking. Oh, there she is. Like, so I have, as a father who's 49, I could care less. I still listen to Metallica when I'm in my truck, when she's not in it. I'm good listening to my music. The spectacle, once they start bringing in the politics of, hey, Taylor Swift, this, that, I could care less. I care about looking at two adults that, honest to God, Matt, I'm divorced. I'm always looking for people that have that kind of appreciation for one another, that kind of ride or die kind of feel. I get that vibe. I appreciate it. And I just love that with my 11-year-old daughter, I'm having conversations with her that I have never had in her life. And that's because of, the attraction and spectacle that it is. And we're watching games that aren't the Green Bay Packers. So, I mean, it's a win-win for me.
You know, my daughter, 17, she listens to Black Sabbath, Iron Maiden, Led Zeppelin, awesome. The Doors.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. I brought her up right.
Chip
I brought her
the
up
old
right.
Block, yeah.
Right away. Now, she can listen to whatever she wants. She also listens to a whole bunch of other rap stuff that I can't wrap my mind around. That's what she likes.
Yeah.
I don't care. Hey, I like chocolate fudge brownie ice cream, right? She likes the pecan caramel. This is life, right? Yeah. My son does not like Taylor Swift. The music that he listens to is more just techno, almost like I called it sonar whale sounds the other day, and that there was a lot of yelling. Like it sounds like in the Hunt for Red October, And they think they hear the anomaly. That's what that sounds like. The caterpillar drive.
Yeah.
Right?
E-N-D, dude.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's what he likes. But he also likes, there's some Black Sabbath that he likes, a couple of songs, you know, here and there that he likes. I'm not a Taylor Swift fan. I'm not a real R&B fan, other than maybe the 60s, 70s, that Detroit Motown R&B. Mm-hmm. That's how old I am. She's not producing records to get me to buy them.
Yeah.
That's not what she's there doing. Yeah. So the fact that I don't have any indifference does not mean that Swifties should be, you know, dragging my carcass through the Twitterverse and planting my head on a stake. Look at this uneducated fool. And it's like, you know what you should do is maybe smoke a joint and listen to a little Deep Purple. Maybe that would open. Open a few things, right?
Yeah.
But again, I agree with you. She's bringing so much awareness and a spotlight on the NFL that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for it.
And wait, it doesn't affect me watching the game. It doesn't affect my game experience. No. If it affects your experience that you have to go on Twitter and just roast everybody who's like saying, hey, what's the big deal? I mean, listen, the girls who love Twitter, love Taylor Swift that are on Twitter, don't mess with them. Don't go at them because you'll be bombarded by I just take it as, hey, it's a game is a game. And I'm looking at the benefits as a father to an 11-year-old daughter. Like, hey, I could give a shit. This is benefiting me. It's for her being 44 seconds on the TV throughout the game.
Who cares?
I could give a shit. Eminem was on the Detroit game. Eminem to me was, you know, I listened to Eminem all the time. Was I like, yay, this is the greatest
thing? Show him again.
It's the part of it. Hey, I'm here for the whole spectacle. You know, I watch games like an adult. You know?
I made one joke, and it wasn't even so much as a Taylor Swift joke as it was a Travis Kelce joke. And, I mean, I swear to you, there was about 6,000 kids, all 11 years old, with braces and pimples that were just, they had the pitchforks. I said, it was after the game, and I said, I bet you Travis Kelce's catching a tight end right now. That's all I said.
Yeah.
And people were like, how do you judge their love? And I'm like, I'm just saying she's an attractive girl. And, you know, he plays tight end. It's a play on words. I don't know what they're doing. I don't know what they're up to. But I'm sure that, you know, it doesn't involve a guitar. So I have in front of me the top 10 relationship deal breakers. Okay, top 10. Okay, I want you to be just yay or nay with me on these ones. I agree with all of these. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Number 10. Number 10. She rates her own farts. That's a bad one. I don't, that's a deal breaker. She's like, that was more like a 7.
You're gone. You're gone after if that one happens.
Yeah. Number 9. Number 9. She rates your farts. Again. Again. Fart jokes okay. Rating them. Something wrong.
Now, she rating with the sniff or the sound?
Yeah. Right? Well, I'll give you a 7 on the sound, but it was only a 3. That sucker did not smell at all. Number 8, cigarette smoker.
I can't.
I used to smoke. I mean, when I played football, hockey, I mean, when I was doing all my physical activity stuff, I was a pack-a-day smoker.
Yeah.
Pack-a-day. Yeah. Right? Before my daughter was born, I quit.
Yeah.
Threw it all away. Never been more grateful. I can smell a smoker from the other side of the grocery store.
Yep. Yep.
I used to stink, and now you guys stink.
Yeah. Well, the best thing about that is that, you know, so when I was going through my divorce, I got back to smoking cigarettes because I was like, I needed something. And I stopped anything else that I was doing, stopped drinking everything, and I just got focused. But get the cigarettes is such a, the stench is awful, number one.
Yeah.
The taste that it puts in your mouth, that if then you're going to have, and that then you're, you know, kissing somebody else. It's very unattractive now. It's funny because, you know, I grew up in the 80s and we were stealing my dad would send me to the gas station with $1.43 to get him a pack of Camel Lights. And I couldn't wait for him to open that, because he'd leave his pack of cigarettes on the counter at night, and I'd have to snag like one or two out of that soft pack, and I'd hide them in the garage. And me and my buddies after school, we'd go out into the woods and, pass a cigarette around like we were, at a concert smoking a joint or something. It was hilarious.
Number 7, nose picker. And I'm not talking about like the hidden nose picker, because everybody picks their nose when they're alone, right? Maybe you're in the shower or something.
Yeah.
I'm talking about like that blatant. So we're sitting at dinner at the restaurant and she decides, right? Done.
Got to put that fake nail all the way up there just to scrape it out. Ugh,
There was a woman in traffic the other day. She was like 2 knuckles deep and she's just digging. And she turns and she looks at me and she's like, what? And I'm like, I can see you. That's how glass works. Do you understand that? Like, this is just disgusting.
Oh, yes.
And then where do you put that? Don't get in her snotty car.
Yeah.
Right? There's boogers on everything. Number 6, claps when the plane lands.
Oh.
Those types of people need to be fucking put down. Oh,
gotta go. You gas gotta chamber go. Them. You gas gotta go.
Them. Tell them they can't leave the plane. Let everybody else get out.
Yeah.
Circle the plane around the airport. Just push them out.
Yeah. Gosh. Oh, man. I'd prefer them to get food poisoning mid-flight and throw up in the bathroom the whole time instead of clap.
You know what I mean?
You know?
I mean, that would be like if my kids clapped every time I pulled into the driveway.
All right, Matthew. Hey, good driving today. Good drive. Hey,
didn't kill
your
us.
Job. Your job.
Didn't kill us.
Beautiful.
Is that the bar? Is
yeah.
that the bar? Number 5, rude to waiters or serving staff.
Were you ever a waiter or a bartender?
Oh yeah.
I've done it my whole life. I grew up in it, My parents owned a restaurant when I was 12 years old dishes.
My grandparents owned a restaurant. Oh yeah.
I mean, before I was 12 years old, I was bussing and everything else.
Yeah.
Like, people that are rude to them, who are that entitlement? If you're out with me and you're rude to any kind of server, and if you do not look at that bill, and it's not, I don't need to tip a 20%. I round it up to the biggest figure, right?
Yeah.
Because I've been there. I don't go out every night or every weekend. So when I go, you go there to treat them well, because you know what? I've been there. I've done it.
Yeah.
I've gone through the slog. Anybody who treats them poorly, gonzo. Later.
I tip 50%.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. If it's a $100 bill at the end of the night, I give them $150.
Boom. Beautiful.
Yeah. And you know what happens the next time I show up? Greatest service I've ever had in my life.
Hey, I remember you.
Yeah. I don't even have to order. They remember my drink.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Worth every dime.
It goes further than people ever recognize, because they're too focused on their wallets and their attitudes that they don't think about the long-term benefits of it. Yeah.
We went to a bar one time, me and my buddies. We were in our early 20s. And I was a bartender. My buddies weren't. And it was dollar a drink night. So the bar has got maybe 500 people in it. Oh. It's just packed.
Yeah.
Right? The bar is 8 people deep all the way around. But I'm noticing that when the waitresses go over, the bartenders stop everything they do, fill the waitress's order, and then go back to the bar. Mm-hmm. So when the waitress finally gets around to me, we place our order. And the guys are like, we're going to wait forever. And I said, hang on. And it was probably about 20 minutes later. She comes back over with our drink order and she puts it down and she goes, $4. And I handed her a 10 and I said, keep it. She goes, what? I said, keep it and don't let us run out. We did not wait in line and we did not wait for a drink. Mm-hmm. And I mean, my drink would get halfway full, and she'd be right back with another one.
Yeah.
And all she was getting was a couple extra dollars more than she was used to getting.
Yeah.
But even when I was a bartender, if some guy walked up and said, oh, I'll take a Budweiser and then gave me a 5 and told me to keep it, when he walked up towards the bar, I reached behind, I grabbed a Budweiser and I'm holding it up for him. You didn't even have to speak anymore.
Yep. Listen, right? I bartended for my brother-in-law's bar for, 8 years. Throughout college, I was a bartender. And there are some real distinct rules and etiquette that you need to do. But if you're the guy saying, waving your dollar bill, as a bartender, if you bartend for any length of time, you know the whole environment. You know where everybody is on that bar. And if you're that guy waving and yelling, boy, I'm going to really piss you off, because I'm going to serve everybody before you.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Because I know that you're not going to tip. You're waving a 20, and I know that I'm going to give you a full rack, 4 or 5 drinks, and you're going to leave some quarters on the bar.
Yeah.
It's not even going to be any paper. And I know that type is so easy to identify, but always
I always wait for that first, I mean, I'm an impatient guy by nature, but I know that when I go to a new place and they don't recognize me, I always give them that first. It's probably going to be about 15 minutes. Like, we're probably going to have to wait here. There's a bunch of people in line. We're just going to have to wait. But then I hit them with a good enough tip that I don't wait no more the rest of the night. I'm even walking towards the bar and he's giving me the nod ahead of everyone else waiting.
Yeah.
Because he knows I'm going to throw him a couple extra bucks instead of those quarters.
You know, if you're on one end of the bar, you see him at the other end of the bar, you're like, hey, wait a minute down here. I got to go run down here and take care of some.
Exactly. Number four, keeps referring to Trump as a smart man. I don't even want to have to, I don't think I have to explain that. Number three, MAGA. Again, those MAGA, listen, one of the greatest times in American history was before World War II, when America was doing nothing but making automobiles and refrigerators, and they were building, and it was, and the economy was going, and everybody was looking out. And I understand America was not a country looking for a fight. In fact, they didn't even want to join in Hitler. They didn't even want to fight with the Japanese. It was just, listen, we can get this deal worked out. We want nothing to do with it. I get it.
Yeah.
But the pendulum has swung too far to one side. And you guys, I'm not saying Canada's perfect. We are fucked.
You guys are a mess up there too, man.
I'm not saying that at all.
Yeah. Your carbon tax is about to blow up again here in April.
Dude.
Good luck on that.
I'm paying 61 cents a liter. So that's $2.40 tax on every gallon extra. They are smoking us, but don't worry. They're going to get voted out here very shortly.
Yeah.
And we'll have the new guys in who will make everything right for about 5 or 6 months, and then they fuck everything back up again.
Yeah.
Number two, top 10 deal breakers for relationships. Number two, hates dogs.
Oh, Christ. I got three labs. You can't even, you can't. If somebody's afraid of slobber, hair on their clothes, you gotta go.
Later. Now, if you say something like I dislike dogs that are under 10 pounds.
There's an argument to be said.
I get why people have them. And I don't walk around going, fuck your little chihuahua. But myself, I would never buy. That's a squirrel. That's a cat.
Yeah.
Right?
I'd rather have a cat than that. Yeah.
I have a Labrador retriever. Mm-hmm. Right? Golden Lab. She's about 40 pounds.
Yeah.
That's as small as I like to go.
Yeah.
The dog before that, we had a Doberman Pinscher. She was 95 pounds. Right? Mm-hmm. I've always had black Labradors. You've got Labradors. I've always had a dog that size. That's a good sized dog.
Yeah, right? I got a 120-pound chocolate, 90-pound fox red, and an 80-pound white lab.
120-pound chocolate.
He's a moose.
He doesn't miss a treat.
He does not miss a treat. He's not. I mean, he's got the big out. His shoulders are like a goddamn grizzly bear. I mean, he is. He's just strong. I love him. Yeah, I think girls with small dogs that are MAGAs are automatic out. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Nose picking, cigarette smoking MAGAs with no dogs.
Yeah.
The number one top 10 deal breaker for relationship. Brrr, the drum roll there. Won't do that thing you like.
I love it. Hell yeah.
Right on, man. It's pleasure great. To see you. I know I'm going to see you in the Twitterverse and I'm going to see you in the Twitter world, and we'll talk more often.
I would love to get together with you anytime, because listen, from the bottom of my heart, you are one of my favorite Canadians that are not related to me. I am half Canadian. I love your show.
That's very specific.
I love your energy, and it's always fun to be on a show that has a great conversation that goes with the flow, that we can talk about Packers, we can talk about life and everything else. So, Matt, Packers Without Borders, I appreciate the hell out of you.
Appreciate you too, brother. You take care. We'll say peace and go Pack Go.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end. This is